That is our number. And we hope you'll join us today. Yes, we are live, day after Christmas. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas. We sure did. It was, really very merry mayhem, if you will, on Christmas Eve, but a quiet time with my bride and I, quiet, but super fun. Went on a hike and had a picnic up on Table Rock. Yes, it wasn't exactly warm up there, but it was great. It was just a nice day, a nice reflecting day, if you will. And I hope you all had time to reflect as well. It's a very deeply spiritual season. And we get caught up in the hubbub day to day. It's easy to do. Who doesn't? Much to do. And it's a weird year. I'm going to talk a little bit about this year because in the second hour today. Because really, we get into this time of year and we're supposed to have predictions, right, about what the next year is going to be. And all, you know, Goldman Sachs sees the S&P at whatever level and J.P. Morgan sees it at this level. And wow, that's just, you know, really important information to babble about. Because they're analysts, so they kind of analyze things and know what's going to happen, right? But they're like never right. I mean, literally, it's the most stupid thing I've ever heard of. Again, just showing us all the time that the future is really hard to predict. But analysts do it anyway. It's like, well, we have to do this. Why? Well, because that's our job, is to make up stuff. Pretend we know stuff. Tell people that the sky is blue. They already know it, but I don't know why they pay us to tell us that. Tell people that. It's weird. And it is weird. And people want to know, well, what do you think about the market? Like, the market's been doing fine for my entire life. It's periodically interrupted with corrections on its way to all-time highs for my whole life. That's what I think about it. I think it'll do that the rest of my life. But that's not what people want. People want to know what's going to happen next year, next week. Why don't you have all of us in Tesla? Huh? How'd you miss that? It's so obvious. There are so many opportunities out there. So many. And it is amazing how when we look back, we just see how amazing wrong. But with ease, we know what we woulda, coulda, shoulda done. And it's just astounding how it can make us feel bad because we didn't predict the future. But it was really, really obvious when you look back. And yet when you look forward and say, what's 2021 going to look like? You don't really know. People didn't know what 2020 would look like. I mean, like, nobody did. Pandemics are kind of hard to predict. But if you did know what was going to happen in 2020, you still would have been really wrong in how you invested money. Because nobody would have said, well, you know, I'm pretty sure that the NASDAQ will be up 40%+ in the middle of a pandemic after being down 25% or 30% at one point. No, that really was not in the cards. We'll talk a little bit about that because it talks about the whole predictive thing that we go through right now. But here's just a little tip of that, right? This is a tip of what happens every time, okay? Every time we are talking about, you pick up the paper, it says something like this. And it's always the same people, year after year, decade after decade, that find reasons to hate the stock market. It's too high. It's too high. It's always too high. It keeps going higher. And then they just say, create more articles and rehash the same reasons why it's too high. Valuations raise questions about laws of investing. In other words, it just clearly defies the laws of gravity. It just does, because I say so. That's it. And of course, Robert Shiller, pardon me, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to say his name without saying, Nobel Peace Prize winner, winning economist, Robert Shiller. Permabear. Never been right about the market that I know of. Certainly, I guess, probably like a stopped watch, he was right once or twice. But quoted most every day, and is quoted in this article, too. Weird, isn't it weird? Isn't it weird? They just quote each other, right? And he says, because it's the famous Shiller Index of some kind, the Shiller Fear Index, I suppose, which is some kind of a lagging over the last 10 years price-to-earnings comparison. Because that's the only valuation technique. And we can't ever come back to the simplicity of looking at it this way. The greatest corporations in the world recreate themselves. They innovate. And they're very, very profitable as the world changes. The great ones figure out how to adjust. They do. Through every decade. So we lose that in the minutia of the day-to-day price-to-earnings ratio, apparently. That they just simply are more productive. Decade after decade. So, number one, that's true. Number two, where else are you going to put money? I mean, it like literally earns zero at the bank.
Well, at least I don't lose my money.
Right? I know. Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah, but you do because you lose to inflation on that money every single year. That's great. Just like the Bible stories talks about, just bury it in the backyard. Not exactly what people should do with their money. I don't care how much fear you have. You know, and I don't need to get into the equity index annuity pimps. We all know they're crooks, and that's the way it goes. That's just the way it is. People fall for it only because of fear. And you could tie up your money for 10 years, and you could get 2%. That's all you're going to actually, it's significantly below 2 by definition because you make zero when the market does go down, and the market will go down sometimes. But you can't make more than 2 in an up year. So you can't make it up. So you have to make less than 2. We tie it up there. We could say we could put it in gold. But gold does what? Nothing. I know. Quotes. It's a store of value. A historic blah, 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 la, 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 inflation. Okay, I got it. Got it. Got it. I'll talk about that one later. Don't want to dive into that too much. Again, all about fear. All about fear. Is our debt too high? Of course it is. I get that. Okay? Will the market correct at some point? Of course it does. Periodically, over and over again. But then we talk about bonds. And literally, a 10-year bond is yielding less than 1%. Again, below the inflation rate. So we guarantee over a 10-year period economic loss against inflation. I don't want a bunch of that. Do you? So we got cash earning zero. We got bonds earning less than the rate of inflation, guaranteed as they might be. What else are we going to do? Real estate? Not liquid, not easily traded. We'll do some of that, sure. But, you know, as large pensions and hedge funds and endowments, you own a little real estate, but you can't sell it and move it, so you can't own that much. Not an easily traded area. We got stocks that over your entire life have done 10% a year. Or we can read articles like this and talk about the Shiller Index for the last 10 years that has been pointing to stocks declining, which of course they've not done. They did periodically and then went to all-time highs. So we all sit there and just like, you know, want to pull our eyeballs out because the market's too high. And we should just really, in my mind, is just take a step back. Is it high compared to what? High compared to what? Where should we be putting money then, sir? Where should we be putting it? What would you suggest? And of course, in the end, there is no suggestion. It's just that stocks are too high. and you're wrong to own them. Which is kind of weird because it's the far and away best returning vehicle that is available to the average person of any income level. It's amazing what it does. But we turn it into some kind of weird analysis, like we're going to figure out when certain to occur over and over again, all the days of our lives, market correction is going to occur. Instead of just owning the great corporations. And we do this all the time. All the time. Over and over again. Same people. And now we're going to hunker down and listen to the economists and the soothsayers tell us how 2021 is going to be. Right. Because they're never right. But it's that time of year. We have to listen. All right. Hopefully, we're going to have lots of calls today. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer email. And we'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. All right, you know, I always like this, if you will, essay. It's not an essay. It makes it sound really long and boring. It's not. It's really just a story. And I think it's really interesting to me as we, because I think it's true, too, my impression of the innkeeper in the Christmas story was not a great impression. And so I appreciated the rethinking it. So was it a greedy innkeeper or a generous capitalist is an interesting question. So I wanted to read this. It's fairly short. And think about it in this Christmas season as we head in, as we close out our first hour together here. The Bible story of the virgin birth is at the center of much of the holiday cheer this time of year. The book of Luke tells us that Mary and Joseph traveled to Bethlehem because Caesar Augustus decreed a census should be taken. Mary gave birth after arriving in Bethlehem and placed baby Jesus in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. Some people think Mary and Joseph were mistreated by a greedy innkeeper who only cared about profits and decided the couple was not worth his normal accommodations. This version of the story has been repeated many times in plays, skits, and sermons. It fits an anti-capitalist mentality that paints business owners as greedy or even evil. It persists even through the Bible record, even though the Bible records no complaints and there was apparently no charge for the stable. It may be the stable was the only place available. Bethlehem was overcrowded with people forced to return to their ancestral home for a census ordered by the Romans for the purpose of levying taxes. If there was a problem, it was due to unintended consequences of government policy. In this narrative, the government caused the problem. The innkeeper was generous to a fault, a hero even. He was overbooked, but he charitably offered his stable, a facility he built with unknown foresight. The innkeeper was willing and able to offer this facility, even as government officials, who ordered and administered the census, slept in their own beds, with little care for the well-being of those who had to travel, regardless of their difficult life circumstances. If you must find evil in either of these narratives, remember the evil is ultimately perpetrated by individuals, not the institutions in which they operate. And this is why it's important to favor economic and political systems that limit the use and abuse of power over others. In the story of baby Jesus, a government law that requires innkeepers to always have extra rooms or to take in anyone who asks would fix the problem. But these laws would also have unintended consequences. Fewer investors would back hotels because the cost of regulations would reduce returns on investment. A hotel big enough to handle the rare census that would be way too big in normal times. Even a bed and breakfast would face the potential of being sued. There would never be enough hotel rooms when the town is full. And if history is our guide, government would chasten them for price gouging, even if they were to raise prices so they could be profitable. This does not mean free markets are perfect or create utopia. They aren't and they won't. But businesses can't force you to buy a service or product. You have a choice, even if it's not exactly what you want. And good business people try to make you happy in creative and industrious ways. Government doesn't care. In fact, if you happen to live in North Korea or Cuba and are not happy about the way things are going, you can't leave. And just in case you try, armed guards will help you rethink your thought process. This is why the framers of the Constitution made sure there were checks and balances in our system of government. These checks and balances don't always lead to good outcomes. We can think of many times when some wanted to ignore these safeguards, but over time, the checks and balances help prevent the kinds of despotism we've seen develop elsewhere. Neither free market capitalism nor the checks and balances of the Constitution are the equivalent of having a true savior, but they should give us all hope that the future will be brighter than many seem to think. Amen. We are always, always gearing towards doom and gloom. I've been doing this show for an awful long time. I've been in this industry for 40 years. Hard to believe. But what always gets the most ink, always, is the doom and gloom crowd. It's the fear crowd. It always gets the most ink by multiples beyond my comprehension. And they're always wrong. They're always wrong. The only right that they have is a little bit of temporary. That's it. I like to remind myself, as much as anybody else who's listening, that when I started in the industry, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was at 800. Interest rates were at 20%, prime lending rates. Unemployment rate was 10%. Today, the Dow is over 30,000. Interest rates near zero. Abundance beyond anybody's comprehension 40 years ago. Beyond anyone's comprehension. And yet we still talk about how bad it is out there. We just focus on what's bad. So much, we don't even see it clearly. We'll be back with the second hour. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. Hour number two upcoming, and of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. They're not this station. There's nobody else's. And again, we're not here to help you figure out what you should buy, or sell. That's nonsensical noise. We're here to talk about the greatness of the markets, the greatness of this country, in spite of all of the angst that there is and anger. It is an upside down world. It is. I get it. But when we succumb to that, we're not a light for the world. We're not a light to our families. And when it comes to our finances, we're a mess. Because we start figuring out why it won't work, how it can't work. And the charlatans of doom and the product pimps go to our forefront because they offer us safety, guarantees. Oh, I just want a guarantee. Just a guarantee. If only I had that. We put so much measure on a life that is so uncertain to find a guarantee with our money. And that's how we fall for this stuff. And we use nice words like, I'm just being conservative, as an example. Oh, you're not being fearful? No, this is not an emotional thing for me. I'm just being conservative right now, because let me give you the 10 reasons why I think it's wise to be conservative right now. Some of them are the same 10 every year. Some of them are new worries, you know, the coming election, the angry orange man in the White House, the totally corrupt new president we have, and his family. The Chinese, not the Chinese, who, the Russians before them. Whatever it is going to be worth worrying about. There's at least 10 of them. So it's not an emotional, fearful decision we're making. No, no, it is completely a conservative thought process. Thoughtful. Especially as this time of year where we take a step back and we pause and we reflect. And I like to reflect, as you know, upon the history of it. And I think we should, and I will in a moment, ponder 2020 and talk about the effects of that on 21. It's just our human nature that is hard to see. If you will, almost, what a gift life is. Life isn't always easy. In fact, it's often hard. It's painful. And if you don't have tragedy in your life, you will. If you didn't this year, you will next. It's the way it works. And I don't know why. I'm not God. I don't have to know. But to be caught in the doom and gloom of the constant press, the constant reporting, will not help you manage your finances well. You will not be a good steward of your money. You will be awful, and you will live in fear, which is another thing kind of we're not supposed to do, right? Because that's not helpful at all to those around us. At all. And when we all sit around and look at a year like 2020, at the beginning, you know, the pundits were, well, I think the S&P will be at blah, blah, blah level. Just barfing up the same numbers, one place to the next. Same numbers. After careful analysis, we see the market up 6 to 8%. 6 to 8, 6 to 8, barf, 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 barf. They're all the same, just parrots. Rip, rip, rip. Got my money. Rip. No change, no difference, no nothing. In fact, the easiest thing in the whole wide world you could always say is the market will not do normal. But what do the analysts always do? Normal. The market doesn't do normal. It goes way up or down. It doesn't do normal. It just averages normal. The average rate of return for the S&P 500 since 1926 is 10. It's been that way for 50 years, for 42 years, for 38 years. It's always like this gravitational pull towards 10 in the very long run. And every year isn't anywhere near 10. Now, that throws us off and allows all of these people to come out with all of their crazy, nonsensical stuff. And we go, oh, J.P. Morgan said, what? Oh, my gosh. Let me write that down. I know it's never right. In fact, it's never even close, but I want to write that down and think a lot about it. And they do. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. But we're here. And so we go to 2020 and we look at that year. And why do we want to look at 2020 instead of ahead of 21? Because it makes us think better about 21 when we realize you don't know what 21 is going to be like. You knucklehead, you have no idea. I don't care how much news you watch, how much stuff you read. Nobody, but nobody, whether it was 2019, 18, 17, but certainly 2020, would have seen the market up for the year after a pandemic that gave us the sharpest quarterly decline since the Great Depression. And then a V-shaped recovery right after it that nobody saw coming. I mean, nobody was that optimistic. We saw the market down 20% in the fastest bear market in history, followed by the fastest bull market in history. Yeah, we were all over seeing that one happen in 2020. Make that prediction. Or that tech stocks would be up over 40% this year. Over 40%, cruising in on 50. Maybe they'll make it this week. In a pandemic. Oh, we can go back and you can tell me. I can hear you now. Well, yeah, but that's because, you know, Amazon sold a lot of stuff and all the tech stocks did really, really good. No, it's not all of that. It's everything did better than anybody expected. Well, if they hadn't injected all the cash in here and if the Fed hadn't done that. I know, you're right. You missed it. I get it. Now make a bunch of excuses why you didn't. That'll help you next go around. It doesn't help to make excuses why you missed it. Learn. Markets work. And we outthink ourselves so often. How many times? Over 35 years or whatever I've done the show, 33, something like that, whatever. Crazy number of years. Decade after decade after decade, there's lots of people out there that are trying to set me right. Yeah, but the deficit. Yes, the deficit's a problem. It's a bunch of morons that run this country. And what we ought to do is just give everybody $1 million. Why not? Why just a couple thousand? Give them $1 million. You know, we just print more. Of course it's foolish and stupid. I got it. But we talk about this for decades and decades and decades. Ross Perot, who elected Clinton running against Bush, had all kinds of hockey sticks he drew. But we're still here. No, we're not just here. We have more abundance than is even thought of humanly possible. That's how abundant it is. It's ridiculous how much money everybody has. But woe is me. And so we go through this all the time. Why the markets won't work. And people are, well, what do you... Okay, what do you want to do? Yes, the market in 2021 is probably going to have some corrections. Because you know what? History says it will. This is not a new prediction. This is just what happens. Markets correct. About at least one 10% correction every year. So when we have one, what we should do is run around the room and scream, this is normal! But we don't. This is the end of it, right? And we do this over and over and over and over again. And then when we have a 2009 and we have a policy response, it's QE 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then we're going to worry about Greece is going to take down the world because we won't have enough olive oil. I'm pretty sure that must be what it is. The island of Crete is going to wipe us all out. This was the raging fear, the pigs nations, Portugal, Italy, all and Greece and Spain, all of those were just going to wipe us out. We have to worry about Europe in 2011. Oh, that wasn't good enough. We need to do it again in the spring of 12 and do it again in the spring of 13. 4 years in a row, we knew Europe was going to take us down. It didn't. QE, when it ended, didn't take us down. The printing of all this money didn't inflame inflation because it didn't circulate fast enough. Not all of these policies are good, but what I'm saying is that to sit there and say that the great corporations of the world really care a whole lot who's elected president, which QE program is in place, the strength of the dollar, the weakness of the dollar, they don't. And they shouldn't. They should be trying to sell more iPhones every year, no matter who's in the White House. And markets work. I'm not remotely saying we shouldn't be fighting the good fight, and we have to. We have to. We're called to talk about human freedom, to talk about the future for our children and grandchildren. And great-grandchildren, the way our founding fathers did, and build a better world. But it's not on woke BS, and so we have to fight that. The people that pretend to care but don't couldn't care less about anything but their own personal power, full of hate and rage The angriest people I know are the most woke. They get angry about everything. They see color in everything. And they see gender in everything. Instead of the best people in everything. It's weird. I get that. And it's weird to hear corporations. It's weird to turn on TV and you can't find anything at all on a commercial in a football game that doesn't have multiple minorities. It's okay, but it just shows how woke we are and how pointless all this is. Playing games like that, we need to look past and understand as we get into this nonsense of prediction that 2021 is going to be fine probably economically because we're coming off of 2020 and there won't be COVID around for more than a couple more months. It's going to be an astounding busting out. But the market is already moving ahead in anticipation. And to sit there and think that we are now going to have this glorious time where the market is just going to go up another 15 or 20% without any hiccups, the market is already pricing in a nice 2021. But once again, we sit around and try to predict something, it makes no sense. Don't do it. No need to. Buy great companies and put them away and own them. Buy great diversified investments and quit worrying about them. You're not going to figure it out. And the point of reflecting on 2020 is that nobody got that. I mean, nobody. And they didn't get it. Even when the market bottomed and it went higher, it wasn't going to keep going higher because we were going to have another this, another that. And then when we thought we were on top of it, then we had another this or that. It just is what markets do, and you can't predict them. And the sooner we get over ourselves in this time of prediction, the more clearly we see things. Meaning, things work out, but you can't predict when the next correction will be, how severe it will be, and when the next market bottom will be. All you can know is when you play, the market keeps hitting all-time highs, decade after decade, after decade after decade, after lifetime after lifetime. And when you start playing the in and out game, you lose. It's really that devastating. I know you think you're smart, but you're not. I'm sorry, but you're not. And if you really are arguing with me now, you really aren't smart. Nobody knows the future. Nobody knows it. And the more you think you do, I'm sorry. I can't reach anyway. It doesn't make any difference. Owning the great companies also takes us away from that fear that drives us into bad choices. Just dial back the noise. Reflect on the simplicity of the birth of our Savior. That's what matters. Our family. Not what the market's going to do next week. Just own the great corporations and be financially secure. And quit being an emotional basket case. I know, you're human. It's hard to do. All right, we got to take a quick break. Jim, Terry, you're up to bat next. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Welcome and thank you for joining us. 580-5436-580-KIDO is our number. And let's go ahead and jump on the phones. Jim, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dave. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you.
Well, if you were listening last Saturday, I called in to old Jennifer and Tom.
I was listening. Yes.
Not that they're old. Well, as usual, I got on my diatribe about, or mono whatever, about technology. And the one word both of them used was convenience. Everything's invented for convenience. In my humble opinion, I think we're going to convenience ourselves into oblivion. But the problem and the insanity to me is the fact that new things are invented before we can even use the old new things that were invented. But I want to mention my main thing, stress. In today's world, I mean, we seem to have a lot of stress because of technology, this, that, and the other. Well, politics, pandemics, whatever the hell. But if you look at perspectives, you go into the past, you know, people coming out west, 1800s, covered wagons breaking down, crop failures, Indian attacks, and, you know, you got to figure they had just a tad bit of stress. And if you want to, you know, compare things, I wonder if they took blood pressure back in the 1800s and the general level of the blood pressure that people had back then.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a fair point. There was real stress back then. It's called life and death stress. Now we make it up in our head about what to be stressed out about because we really don't have people trying to kill us and or simply not being able to find food. So you're right. It's a different kind of stress. We have manufactured stress today. Back then, they had real stress, and people didn't live very long. So many of the diseases we see or talk about now take a long time to manifest themselves. Most cancers do. Not all, but most do.
Back then, people would die before they had a chance to get cancer.
Correct. Exactly. Or they died of high blood pressure. We never knew it. Right, because they stroked out. So there's lots of things, and that was those were not the good old days. But I agree with you. We need to learn to use technology. I've always felt that the best users of technology are people my age and maybe up to 20 years younger, because we get to really use technology, not abuse it. We don't sit around with our goggles on, constantly playing video games and not actually being with people. But we have the ability to, any time down the road I'm curious about anything, I can look it up in a second. I can ask Siri how many people live in the town I'm driving through. What is their industry? That's interesting. It makes my trip more interesting. It makes my road trip. What is that thing over there? You can actually shoot a picture of it as you're driving by and wondering what kind of crop that is, and Siri will tell you what it is. Oh, that's an artichoke plant. Oh, I didn't realize that. You know, whatever it is. That's fascinating to me and makes my life more interesting.
You know, Dave, I've never missed that.
Yeah, I understand. And you may not.
I've gone through the town and just looked at the town.
Yeah. I do just look at the town. I'm just fascinated by things. And I think it's nice to be able to use technology in that way. And also in very practical ways. You know, where's the nearest store to go to? That's nice to have, too. So I think it's very nice to do. I also like to get on here and in the middle of a day when my wife is doing her nursing, wants to flirt with me or something, or vice versa, I can send her a nice cute little text, you know, and that's fun.
You demoted your significant other from bride to wife.
All right, Jim, you have a great rest of the day. Thank you for
your... I know bride is more romantic. Anyway, have a great 2021.
All right, you do the same. Thanks for the call.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let's go ahead and jump on over to Terry. Terry, thank you for waiting. What a patient man you are. Thank you, sir.
Well, it's part of life. If you get in a hurry, you're going to run into stuff.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you didn't run into anything with the phone.
I wanted to thank you, sir. You are an excellent teacher. All those years I was riding the bicycle and listening to you on Saturday mornings, you know, never calling in and whatnot. But you passed on enough lessons that finally hit home, and I was able to pass on to my grandson.
Oh, great.
He just came down on a trip through to Pocatello to tell us that he was doing all his homework and getting lined out with all the information to enlist in the Air Force.
Fantastic. Good
so
for
you're,
all
you're
of you.
You're a young man that's got his collective stuff together with a girlfriend, 21 and 19 years old, respectively, and they're just saying all their friends are idiots, and we're going to go try to make something of this world.
Good for them. You know what? That's just such great hope, isn't it? You know, we all complain about this generation, you know, they won't get their faces off the cell phone, things like that. But you know what? There's plenty of kids out there just like him on his way to a future of promise.
Yep, all the heartbreak snowflakes out there in the world, just that I know there's better.
Yeah, yeah. They're not all snowflakes, and I think that's the thing that I don't ever want to get caught up in, because we all get that feeling as we get older that this generation or that one is ridiculous. And we get angry. I get angry. I get frustrated with all this woke insanity and, you know, all these really woke people burning down cities and full of hatred. And all they see is gender and race in every single discussion and every single thing. And it's like, you know, screaming at people about being racist is like, wow, you are so racist. It's so sad.
Well, I go back to part of it's my mother and part of it's the good bosses I had in the Air Force that got to keep your sense of humor intact.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And if you do that, then you can sort of look at them and shake your head and try to tell a joke, get them to smile a little bit, or if you can't do that, you spool them up some more because they're fun to watch.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
But and a quick comment for Jim there. I keep saying to my girlfriend, 100 years ago, we'd be dead.
Yeah. That's a really good point. That's true.
Keep everything in perspective.
Happily dead, you would have been, right?
Yeah. You wouldn't have known any better.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
There you go.
We did our best and we carried on.
Exactly, exactly. Terry, God bless you and thank you. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas, and thanks for your call.
Did too. Thank you, David. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We've got Fox News at the bottom of the hour here up to bat, and then hopefully you will give us a call. 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We've got a nice long segment here, by the way. A little bit light on the commercial load, which is fun. So if you do want to try to call in, we've got time today. We really do. We've got plenty of time. And, you know, it's like we were talking about before, that analysts are almost always wrong. But it's talked about all the time. Because, again, we're talking about the future. And I think this is, is it just me? I'm kind of asking this question out loud here. I don't think it's just me to be pondering why it is that we sit around and listen to these guys. Right? And I mean, you know, and read about their report. Here's our 2021 report. Now, I need to have a couple of economic reports and even some predictions in my life. I need that, right? But you don't. Most people don't. It doesn't help me as far as managing money. What we need to be talking about, what I'm talking about, that I look for, is something like a report on an area that I know nothing about. And that's very difficult and specialized. Like, how many municipal bonds are being issued right now? Okay, those are the tax-free bonds. Why? Because they're yielding quite a bit. Certainly relative to treasuries, they're yielding a lot more, and they're tax-free. So unless there's a monster supply coming out, municipal bond prices, they ought to do really well, especially compared to other bonds. That's the kind of economic report you're looking for, not like what the market's going to do. That's absolute nonsense. And you want to have really smart people telling you that are like in real estate, telling you why maybe we're getting nearer a bottom in real estate, for example. But I would avoid this or this, you know. But most of the time, what they're doing is telling you the obvious. Like,
we're really underweight shopping malls right now.
Oh, because you were geniuses.
I mean, here's the thing. Do I want to be underweight shopping malls after they go down like 75%? No. I think I might want to be buying them because maybe what they'll do is close them and turn them into data centers for all I know, or apartments. They still own the land. Just because people don't shop the same way. Are they economically feasible? And guess what they've done? They've doubled since we were underweight. Shopping malls. You know, that's not insightful, but you learn over the years that there are certain people that give you insight into good areas, right? That don't just, that aren't afraid to tell you what they really think. No, you're wrong. It is now time to do shopping malls. Well, why do you think so? I was told nobody would shop again, and there's a pandemic. Didn't you notice that? There are a few, and there's a few in multiple areas. I think you can buy Chevron today. Really? Tell me some more. That's an interesting thought. Tell me about that. Tell me how you can feel good about doing that when everybody's telling you the world of oil is going away. Those people are worth listening to. But it's for more specifics, not this general, what they think the market's going to do. And you can avoid that. You should avoid that. Please avoid that. Just don't even listen. They're literally, I don't know how many times I can say this, but they're literally almost always wrong. That's, I mean, a coin flip is 50-50. These guys aren't 50-50. Even predicting something like interest rates 6 months out. Really, I'm serious. It's like unbelievable when you look at how economists have done over the years. Less than a coin flip. Less than a coin flip. You know, some of these things are, again, as I mentioned before, we're going to run to the phones here in a second. If we keep listening to the doom and gloom, the constant pimping of products, the fear, folks, we miss it. We miss the simple fact that we keep hitting all-time highs all of our life, temporarily interrupted by absolutely certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives, market corrections on the way to, again, an all-time high. This just isn't hard. But when we turn on, allow in the constant bombardment of negativity, it doesn't help. And I'm asked this question all the time. How can they say you get market participation and no risk? And the answer is they can because they don't have any licenses. And it is unethical. Of course it is. But they don't have any licenses that require them to fully disclose. What does fully disclose really mean? It's a nice word for requiring people not to lie or hide important data. So here's the bottom line. I tell people this about once a year. Because I know it's not good enough, right? Because people want to know why it doesn't work and the equity index annuity and the caps and all this. They want to know. And all that is all it gets in the weeds and people's head spins. They roll back in their eyes and they glaze over and they start babbling things, okay? Because it's so complicated. The world of options and derivatives is how this is run in the back, okay? But here's the bottom line. It pays so much commission, which is not disclosed, by the way. So much commission comes out of it. Like, imagine if you bought a car, okay? And the commissions on the car, the $100,000 car you bought, were so high. Then the car wouldn't be $100,000, it'd be like $120,000, right? Okay? Because the car dealer still needs to make money and so on, right? But anyway, I want you to understand this. Because people say, well, this broker doesn't do it, or Dave doesn't do it because he can't do it. I can do it. I can sell equity index annuity
all day long. All you need is an insurance license. I've got one of those. So if we did think that this product was reasonable and thought maybe 20% of the money goes in, and people, you got to understand, they think you should put it all in, okay? But we're only going to put 20% in. 20% of the client assets that we have under management. We would receive $20 million. And we'd never have to do anything with that money again. No more management, no more moving it around or trying to figure out how it's going to draw income. It just drops in there. We get $20 million. For 20%. I guess we're just that stupid. Or maybe just too principled, perhaps, to not take that money. $20 million just laying there. I don't know. To me, that's kind of an important understanding. It's not, I have to actually be able to live with myself. And if that's not good enough, then call and we'll explain or go to our website. There's actually information there on equity indexed annuities. Jim, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave. I had a quick comment about when you were talking about COVID, you thought maybe a couple more months and the course of the pandemic might be changing. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah, I guess they probably should. I don't know precisely, but the answer is it's going to be changing as more and more people get vaccinated. Then more and more things will open up. Do I think it's completely gone for the rest of my life? Really have no reason to think yes or no on that, but go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the vulnerable are going to be vaccinated fairly early here in the next couple of months, and that's going to result in lower death rates as fewer of the vulnerable get infected with the virus.
And also, by the way, of course, just like flu or anything else, if half the population is inoculated, and I know the efficacy is not the same in the flu shot, I get it, but if the efficacy is, as they say, and I'm quite sure it is, this is pretty rigid studies, of over 90% and more vaccines are coming, I really have a very strong belief that with half the people running around inoculated, they can't get it, and that therefore they can't give it. That really will cut down even for those that aren't, quotes, vulnerable, to your point. The death rate will continue to go down. It already has plummeted as we've learned how to treat it. But as people who are the most vulnerable, even those of us who are not in that most vulnerable category are going to have less incidence of getting it.
Yeah. And another comment that's somewhat related is you mentioned some that you've read say that you can own Chevron. And I was wondering, you know, as people start to drive their cars more and take flights, mm-hmm. as the risk of the COVID pandemic goes down, there's going to be an increase in people feeling safe to commute and to fly. And that's going to result in higher fuel usage. Is that somewhat related to your thinking regarding the oil companies and gas companies?
It's I think, first of all, this has been a great industry to avoid, okay? And I'm just saying that from time to time, you reach a point of peak of pessimism. They become so cheap. You don't have to make a prediction of more usage because you know with a commodity that it will self-regulate, meaning you're just not going to put more holes in the ground if the price isn't of value, right? I mean, you don't drill more holes to lose more money, right? So those types of things shift within commodities, and maybe we've reached that point. But Jim, I do think we're going to open up the globe again, and people will travel and use more energy in all pursuits of life. We use a lot more energy than people realize making plastic, for example. Okay, so there's a lot of petrochemicals in everything that we consume, and you may not think about it. Even these wipes that are sitting here probably have some petrochemicals in them. It's an astounding amount that we use
just in day-to-day. So the more stuff we use, the more petrochemicals we use as well. So even if you're a real greenie, you still are going to be using petrochemicals. You can't help it. And as the world grows again, we use more and more. So I do agree we are going to travel more, and particularly air travel. What is interesting to me, as I'm not fearless. I don't try not to run with scissors too much, but I try to look at the data. And I am going to say this because I thought it was most astounding thing. Make your get your tickets. Make your trips. Don't worry about it, because here's what happened in the study. 1.2 billion people have flown since February. 1.2 billion. 44 of them, of people, of those 1.2 billion, have gotten COVID from travel. And if you want something, it's just a common sense thing. I just like looking at it in a common sense way. If you want to just say, okay, how many others weren't, you know, diagnosed, I get that. That is double the number, whatever. It's still so small that the reality says you can't be safer than on an airplane. That's the safest place to be, right? Okay, so when we take that and we think about it, how many flight attendants that are on the plane all day long, multiple people coming and going for months, they're not dropping like flies. Why? Because it isn't spread that way. And so I think we all ought to just kind of look at the data sometimes. So air travel will come back very fast, but also I think the fact of it is it ought to be coming back now, because they figured it out how to make it safe to travel. Jim, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Have a great and happy 2021. We'll talk to you next week. And Bob, hang on. There we go. Push the wrong button. Bob, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If it's difficult to predict what's going to happen in the markets, do we know why six stocks, large cap stocks, companies were responsible for big gains in a market? And if it wasn't for them, then we'd have half of the gain. And then why then did we have the so-called rotation toward more small cap stocks and value? And based on that, does any of that teach us what could happen in the future, or is it still rolling the dice with all of this?
No, so it's a really good question.
Why did the things that happened, why did it happen?
Yeah, Bob, it's a great question. Those are the kinds of questions you want to ask, is relative valuation types of questions, right? So does it make sense that six stocks dominate the returns? Yeah, it's just that those six usually change, but right now it's gone on for a long, long time, where we've got the Amazon, Google, etc. So you have to say, what's going on here in the market? Does it make sense? Certainly, as we look back at 2020, it did, because those companies are all digital, they're online, and all the other companies collapsing, like cruise lines and leisure hotels, etc. Well, that makes logical sense, right, Bob? We know why that's happening. And so then as we get closer, now why are small caps finally? Hey, that was a bad bet, saying that small caps are cheap. This is why in investing, you have to ask the questions, are they cheap? But you also have to be unbelievably patient sometimes, because cheap does not mean the money's coming your way. It means you bought a good, cheap company, but you may have to wait for 5 years before the rest of the world goes, whoa, that's a cheap company, and bids it up to astronomical levels. That's what we've seen in small cap. It's been an unbelievable run over the last couple months. I mean, literally unbelievable. I don't think we've ever seen I remember, because I've reported it. We had never seen an increase in the Russell 2000 since it started as much as we got in October. It was incredible upturn. And Russell 2000 is small company stocks. Why? Bob, it's logical. If we are going to reopen, what companies benefit the most from a reopening? Small companies. They don't have the backing. They're higher risk. They don't have billions sitting in cash to wait it out. Many of them are not just digital types of companies where they're killing it. They're waiting for the world to open and sell their products again. And that's why the small cap increase. Will it continue is what we don't know and can't know. But there's nothing wrong with going out and saying, I think this particular area, value stocks, is cheap. For example, if you were to ask me, I'll offer it anyway. What do I think in 2021? We'll talk a little bit about that next year. I'll make my goofy predictions, right? And so we'll just talk about it, but we're not making predictions of what the Dow or the S&P is going to be at. That's silliness. What we're going to do is talk about what areas look like they might have potential in 2021. And you might want to add a little bit more to those, whether it's small cap, emerging markets is another area. Municipal bonds, I touched on earlier today, is an area that people ought to look at if they really have to have fixed income. I don't think you're going to win big there, but if you really feel like you have to have money sitting in bonds, at least you're beating the inflation rate in municipal bonds. And so I feel better about that than other areas of bonds. So if we're looking for relative valuations, that's what I think you look for all the time. And it does have some predictive ability, but it doesn't on a short-term basis. Can I say to you that Chevron stock is cheap relative to history? Yes. Does that mean that oil prices will go up, that Chevron won't step on a rake somehow and figure out how to blow it? Of course, all those things are true, and they can stay cheap for longer than you can stay solvent, right, to borrow a Wall Street phrase. So you have to be careful of all that to not be overly predictive, but I don't disagree with what you're saying, that certain things are happening and certain things, therefore, are not happening. Could they flip-flop? And that's what you're trying to look at. And I think that as we reopen, you're going to see other stocks that got crushed this year continue to do better than, say, the tech stocks. But, man, that's been a bad bet for 10 years. 10 years. Tech growth has outperformed value.
Yeah. But
thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
You have a great day and a happy Christmas season. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye
now. We are out of time, and I'm ready to roll. And, again, I hope you have a great Christmas week this week, a week of reflection. And it is. It is for me, too, as I think back of 2020. I got married this year. That's pretty cool. We had a pandemic this year. Not so cool. It's been, if you will, condense it. What a weird year this has been, filled with joy and pain, pretty much like everybody, right? God bless and have a great rest of the day.